Hello, welcome back to Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Berlin, and we have a very special episode for you today brought to you by Elanco Animal Health. They've brought us an incredibly brilliant guest, Dr. Brittany Lancelotti. Dr. Brittany, thank you so much for being here today. Would you just take a minute to share a few things about yourself?
Sure. So I am a board-certified veterinary dermatology specialist at the Animal Dermatology Clinic in Pasadena. I've worked at the Animal Medical Center in New York City prior to veterinary school, and I spent a lot of time focusing on behavior modification during technician school. I fell in love with dermatology during veterinary school at Western University, and I have a dog who is a challenge to my understanding of allergies, otitis externa, Cushing's disease, and animal behavior. So I can sympathize with a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about today, as well as what my clients are going through on multiple levels.
Yeah, that sounds like a vet pet right there.
Exactly.
None of us can have easy pets, right? That's not fun. So it's really great to have you, because I'm really excited about a couple of the things we're going to be talking about today too. So I was really looking forward to this conversation. And I want to just jump right in and ask you, you know, about that big topic, which is reducing stress at vet visits. You know, one of the best things that I think has come up in veterinary medicine in recent years has been this movement to kind of evolve how we handle pets in the clinic so that our visits are less stressful. And paying attention to patients' stress level and being aware of that has really become the center of some really important conversations. And I understand you use a scary movie analogy, which I'd like to hear.
Yeah, I am absolutely not a fan of horror movies. My husband loves them. But for me, they cause this major fear, anxiety, and stress. So when Halloween comes around, I am like that trembling chihuahua at the vet. The only difference is I will never be okay with horror movies. But we can reduce fear in patients like that chihuahua. So I try and take a lot of videos when I'm interacting with my patients. And when I watch back those videos, for some patients with a history of anxiety, that initial visit can look like a found footage scary movie. But if we can recognize what the patient's stressors are and work as a team with the client and the staff, I can turn those scary movies into romantic comedies. So I'm really thrilled with the growing number of veterinary professionals that are embracing this movement and discovering how many benefits it has.
Yeah, and not just benefits for the animals, right? I mean, that's the beautiful other side to this, is that moving away from stressed out animals in the vet clinic makes all of us feel better too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think for veterinary clients, it's a game changer for sure. And I personally have experienced a lot more job satisfaction since focusing on this stuff. So, but what about, is there a downside to this, to low stress practices? What about the people who say, I don't have time, it's going to take too much time, or it won't work in a shelter or an emergency setting?
Yeah, there's always going to be naysayers out there. So for the skeptics that think that it won't work in situations like shelters or emergency, I would try and encourage those people to have an open mind. There's not this one size fits all approach to minimizing stress in the clinic. It's all about having the tools to be able to evaluate each situation and each individual patient so that you can prioritize what you need to get done during that visit versus what you want to get done. So if a procedure isn't emergent, hold off. Try it again when the animal's less stressed. And after having a positive experience on that visit and administering anxiolytics prior to the next encounter, it'll make things easier. Or if you're in an emergency setting, things like pain medications, anxiolytics, and sedatives, they go a really long way towards keeping the animal comfortable while allowing your staff to be able to perform those life-saving procedures that you need to do that day. Let me be clear. When you address an animal's emotional needs, it does not mean you're putting aside the safety of the veterinary staff. In fact, it allows you to make decisions which minimize the risk of an animal becoming dangerous. If you've got a pet that's dangerously stressed and you absolutely need to accomplish a specific procedure, then you have to discuss sedation as soon as possible. If you take a moment to evaluate and address that patient's emotional needs, it's a worthwhile investment for that visit and for future visits. And clients, they tend to be relieved to hear that you're taking into account their pet's stress level. And I generally find them to be receptive to suggesting ways that we can make the animal's experience better. In fact, they've actually shown that practices that are intentional about addressing the animal's emotional needs will see an increase in repeat client visits and gross revenue. So it's tough to continue to be a naysayer when there's so much benefit to the staff, the patients, the clients, and basically the bottom line too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those of us who have seen it at work know that that's the truth, you know, and as a pet owner too. I mean, now I just expect that when I need something from my own pets. So what about stress? We talk a lot about stress. We use that word a lot. And we all have those patients that come in that practically bust down the door when they see the vet clinic, you know, they can't wait to get out of the car. But most of our patients are not like that. And even those really exuberant, happy guys can be really stressed, right? It can be sort of a overstimulation type of stress. Mm-hmm. So what is stress by definition? And what would you call an acceptable level of stress that can be expected? And when do we need to start thinking about special techniques to lower stress?
Yeah, so stress is any environment or experience, inanimate object or living being that causes a disruption to a body's normal functions. And while we think of stress as a bad thing, it's not always bad. I mean, we do need some stress, but stress becomes detrimental to our health and to our patient's health when it's prolonged and it significantly disrupts the baseline stress level. So I like to give the example that your in-laws call. They say they're coming for a visit and you have this immediate spike in your stress level, but they arrive and they make you some eggplant parm like they do in my Italian family. And very quickly, that stress level returns to baseline when you drop them off at the airport. Now, just imagine that they call and they say that they are moving into your house. You have that same spike in baseline, but things are never going back to normal. And then I wound up gaining 15 pounds stress eating eggplant parmesan.
I mean, there's worse things, but
but in general, we should expect to see a small increase in stress when we do something to our pets that are unfamiliar. But the key is to monitor the animal stress level and make sure that it doesn't increase to the point that we can't bring them quickly back down to baseline with things like treats. You know, the eggplant parm works really well, or gentle handling techniques. A really good understanding of canine and feline body language is key for us to determine an animal stress level and to monitor how comfortable or uncomfortable a pet is in any given situation within the clinic.
Yeah, that's a great point. Understanding when that stress is happening before it's reached the point of no return, right? That is, that's an art for sure. And I think we often don't remember that animals don't know that it's going to be temporary. They don't know that the in-laws are coming for dinner. They think they're moving in. And every time, you know, right? This situation's going to be like this forever. And I mean, I'd be terrified too if every new situation felt like that. So yeah, that's a really important point. I love that analogy. Yeah. What do you say to those clients? Because there are always going to be those clients that say, just do it, you know, just get it done. We've always gotten it done before. I got to get going. And they're not on board with taking their time like you know we need to.
So one of the big things that we do as veterinarians is we teach, right? So a big part of our jobs is education. And if the client is insisting that the procedure is performed despite the pet being absolutely terrified, it's usually because they don't understand the animal behavior the way that we do. So Mrs. Jones can look at her smiling chihuahua and see it as happy to be at the vet. But you and I, with our understanding of animal behavior, know that we're just a few seconds away from filling out a bite report. And if we just do it without taking into consideration how to approach Mrs. Jones's land shark, then we're going to get hurt, or our staff is going to get hurt. So I'd like to explain the body language the animal is using to demonstrate its anxiety, talk to the clients about what my wants are versus what my needs are at that visit, and come up with a plan with them, whether that's just adjusting my handling techniques to something the patient's more comfortable with, or having them come back on a different day equipped with anxiolytics. My technicians will tell you I give out tons of trazodone and gabapentin just to make my patients more comfortable to come in and see me. If the animal does need to be sedated due to increasing stress on that visit, then I have a conversation with the client about how prolonged severe stress and cortisol release can actually do more harm to the body than just the short-term sedation does.
Yeah, that's a great point too. I feel like clients often don't think about that, that all that stress without knowing if it's ever going to end can be so harmful. Look at us, you know, even when we know it's ending, it can be really, really tough.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that education aspect. And I have a lot of clients who I think are really appreciative of us taking the time to explain all that, because it gives you a new window into how your pets are behaving at home too, which makes everybody happier if you understand each other better.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a dermatologist. We spent a lot of time talking about behavior so far, which clearly we're both interested in, but let's get down to talking about derm. Besides that being obviously your area of greatest expertise, it's a time when we specifically have to be really hands-on, and oftentimes around the sharp parts or the tender and sensitive parts. And we also likely have a lot of follow-up visits in the future. So I would think that low stress handling is really important in this area.
Absolutely. Think about the most sensitive parts of the animal. It's their paws, their ears, their face, and their butts. And these are the areas which most often have dermatologic disease. So when you're evaluating a patient for skin problems, you're getting really personal with them. That invasion of personal space can make the animal really frightened and stressed. So going slow, constantly evaluating the patient's body language is really important to make sure that you don't reach that threshold at which you lose the ability to calm them down again. If that happens, that memory of stress that they experience will actually condition your pet to associate the clinic with something negative. And because the vast majority of skin conditions that I see are chronic, things like allergies, endocrine disorders, immune-mediated diseases, those patients need frequent follow-ups. So they're going to be coming back, and each follow-up visit becomes more and more challenging if the animal has a negative response to the previous visit. Alternatively, if we make the experience enjoyable to them, then each subsequent visit becomes easier for the pet, for the client, and for the staff as well. There's a really great episode of Grey's Anatomy in which Meredith and Christina, they escape up to the dermatology department to de-stress because it's calm, there's relaxing music, all the colors are muted pastels, and there's this general spa-like feel up there. And that's how I want my patients and my clients to feel when they come into our clinic, so that they can look forward to those recheck exams. And that allows me to have the continuity of care for these often really challenging cases.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out to my dermatologist's office because it is very spa-like and I do kind of want to just hang out there. So I'm sure that your office can also be that way, especially with all of this stuff taken into consideration. And I think it's especially admirable to get to that point of low stress in a veterinary dermatology practice, because those dogs with the otitis are some of the most painful and uncomfortable animals that you'll ever see, right? Mm-hmm. And they could be some of the most fearful and anxious patients that we see in any practice. And those painful, inflamed ears full of gunk are right next to the bitey bits. And we need to figure out how to make these visits less stressful. So what are your best tips for trying to get these pets treated?
Yeah, a lot of my day is spent dealing with those painful, icky ears. So when I have a patient that has acute otitis, particularly those painful, erosive, ulcerative, or really purulent ears, any otoscopic exam that I try to perform is going to be really limited. The ears, we have to remember, are a special sense. They're innervated by cranial nerves. So any pain in that area is going to evoke an exaggerated stress response. And ears, I think, are an excellent example of prioritizing needs versus wants. I really want to know what the inside of that ear looks like, but I absolutely need to obtain cytology so that I can guide my treatment of the infection. So for most patients, ear cytology generally creates only a minimal increase in stress. And then after it's obtained, I give lots and lots of treats to bring that stress level back down to baseline and create a positive association. And so there's a couple different ways that you can obtain cytology. And the classic cotton swab technique is the most common technique. But if it's not done properly, it can be painful for these guys. That swab, it seems soft and gentle, but it is perceived as rough, rigid, and threatening by those magnified special senses, especially if the animal's already painful. So if the patient is averse to cotton swabs, or if you need to obtain a sample from the horizontal canal or adjacent to the tympanum, you can use a red rubber catheter technique. I like this technique because what you do is you take a red rubber catheter and cut the tip of it off so that the hole is at the end and not at the sides. And you'll attach a 6-milliliter syringe, gently advance the catheter into the horizontal canal. And then once you meet resistance, you can suction with the syringe to aspirate any fluid or debris into the catheter. Keep in mind, though, that sound of suctioning is going to be audible to you outside the ear, so that patient is going to be very attuned to the sound that's actually taking place inside of their ear canal. So when you are done with your procedure, remove the catheter smoothly, quickly, and then follow it with lots of treats and rewards to create that positive association. The other thing we need to think about with ears is the difficulty that clients may face when they're treating otitis externa at home. And this is something for me, having a pet with chronic otitis externa who also has behavior problems, that I have struggled with. It is really important to ask your client to describe what treatment and cleaning of the ears is like for them at home. Some clients, they've never treated ears before, or they have, and they have significant difficulty with at-home treatments because of how their dog responds. In those cases, if my cytology suggests staph, malassezia, or a combination of the two, what I like to do is clean the ears in the clinic and then apply a long-acting product like Claro to ensure that the infection's being appropriately treated over the next few weeks. Then I will recruit my technicians to perform the invaluable task of teaching the client how to desensitize their pet to having the ears touched and cleaned without me actually worrying that the animal is getting treated during the next few weeks. So the client is able to work on behavioral modification without having to actually put anything into those really highly sensitive ears. The other reason that I like Claro for these cases is that the steroid mometasone, it is really good at decreasing the painful inflammation associated with the infection. So that also improves the animal's comfort level with manipulation of the ears. The behavior modification that the client is doing will set them up for success with the maintenance ear cleanings after we've resolved the infection, which many patients with chronic skin disease will need so that we can help to prevent the relapse of otitis externa. And then if they do have a relapse, the clients will be better prepared to use at-home treatments if they need to in the future.
Yeah, I gotta agree. I've been really excited to have Claro as a alternative, you know, as an option to treat ears, because I feel like the time to bring up how to clean and treat ears, right, is definitely not the time when we're most likely to do it, which is when the ear is really inflamed and ticked off. And they do seem to feel better so fast. And the clients get really happy when they see that. But there are times when, you know, we won't be able to do what we need to do at that appointment without stressing out the pet too much. And we might need sedation or anesthesia. So when do we take it to the extent of using sedation or anesthesia? And how do you explain that to clients who are concerned about risks?
Yeah, so there are definitely times when we're going to be less able to effectively treat the ears when the animal's awake. And if that's the case, I'm usually going to recommend anesthesia for video otoscopy. Generally, I find that sedation is not enough for really good ear flush. With sedation, the animal maintains that reflexive head shaking. They're still sound sensitive with alpha 2 agonists. And if the eardrum is ruptured and we're only sedating them, the animal's airway isn't protected. So generally, if there's significant purulent exudate despite appropriate topical antimicrobial therapy, if I suspect that there's a foreign object or a mass, or if the animal needs a middle ear flush, that's when I'm going to recommend anesthesia rather than increase the animal's stress by trying to clean while they're awake or with just sedation. I rarely perform video otoscopy on the very first visit, so it does give me the chance to discuss the possibility of anesthesia and plant that seed in the client's mind for the future. So most of the time after we discuss risk versus benefit for the procedure, as well as ways to mitigate risk, such as pre-anesthetic blood work on cardiac workup, the clients are going to be on board with allowing me to do anesthesia to get those ears under control.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Jumping into anesthesia on the first visit in any specialty or in general practice doesn't usually go over all that well unless it's been discussed ahead of time, right? Yeah. So let's take a minute to talk about a slightly maybe less invasive, but nevertheless sometimes pretty stressful, but favorite diagnostic test of dermatologists? Cytology of the skin. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you handle getting cytology samples in anxious patients?
Yeah, absolutely. Cytology is a critical diagnostic tool for any patient with skin disease. Cytology, everything. In my practice, cytology is almost always a need and not a want. All of our patients get cytology. So generally, prior to obtaining cytology, I have already been examining the skin. I have hands on the animal and I'm able to assess their response to gentle handling. I'm also able to assess if the skin is painful or if it's pruritic. So those Demodex dogs are a lot more painful, whereas allergic dogs are more pruritic. An itchy dog's best friend is the person that gently scratches them. So I use that to my advantage. Like, oh, you want that scratch? That feels good. So before I obtain my cytology, I also look at the location on the body that needs to be sampled. So the density of free nerve endings is a lot higher on the face and the paws than it is on the shoulder and the back. So if I think I can take equally diagnostic samples from the shoulder as from the face, I'll sample the shoulder. It's a lot less invasive for the pet. But if I have to obtain cytology from areas like the paws, rather than just going straight for that highly sensitive area, grabbing their foot and yanking, I'll start by touching a less sensitive area like the shoulder and then gently moving my hand down towards the paw, allowing the animal to adjust to my touch and watching for changes in their body language as I get closer to the paw. Because what can happen is their fear, anxiety, and stress level can increase as we get to those more sensitive areas. And then as with most procedures, I use lots and lots of high-value rewards like treats or toys. And the other thing is, generally, while I'm taking a history or starting my physical exam, a lot of times I'll have my technicians work on doing a little bit of behavior modification and teaching those pets how to give paw or shake so that we train them to offer that behavior. And it helps me with getting my physical exam and my cytology samples during that visit.
Oh my gosh, I'm just having fantasies now of like walking in to check my pododermatitis dog and he just puts up his foot and lets me do my little like tape
it's
prep,
the best.
You know?
It
like
really
that would be
is.
Amazing. yeah, and I think I just wanted to touch on something that you said here, which is that, you know, you do this kind of maneuver where if you know you're going to need to touch a dog's foot, you don't just go for the foot because that seems rude, right? And you'll go for an area where most dogs are okay with being touched and then kind of work your way down, but you're watching the dog while you're doing that. And that's the really big thing, right? Is I feel like so many things happen that maybe if you aren't really familiar with animal behavior, you'll say, well, that was unprovoked. You know, or I just never saw that coming. But this is a way that your team can stay safer because you can usually see that behavior changing as your touch moves down or as you're approaching the area that they're sensitive about. And paying attention to that subtle body language has saved many a bite, I think, in my clinic. So that's a really great point. I'm really glad you brought that up.
I did want to add in something here because I think it's been a little bit of a challenge with us not having clients in the clinic since the pandemic started. I used for a very long time clients to my advantage, and not in all cases. I mean, every situation is different, but a lot of times I trained my clients to be giving treats to their pet while my technician was gently controlling the animal and I was performing my physical exam. And I would have the clients tell me, okay, when your pet stops taking a treat, you need to tell me right away. Because I am not always able to see what's happening up front if I'm looking, you know, back at the back legs or the rear. And so having the clients be involved and letting me know that the pet's fear, anxiety, and stress level has increased because they stopped taking treats was a good indicator that I was doing something that was, I maybe needed to adjust my technique there. But it's been a little bit of a challenge since not having that extra pair of hands to be the treat giver and to be watching the body language as well.
Yeah, for sure. That is also a great point because I feel like curbside changed everything, right? We had our protocols down and we knew who we wanted where in a lot of cases. And so many pets, I feel like, do better when they can see mom or dad. And it did just change a lot. And that actually brings us to what we call our Keep It Brief segment, which doesn't really have to be that brief, but it's where we might have some wrap-up thoughts. And one of the things I wanted to talk about in this segment is how to keep the stress down before they even get to the clinic. So even if clients can't be involved in the exam room anymore, you know, we always preach prevention is the best medicine, right? So what can we do to try to prevent those stress levels from ramping up before they even get to see us?
Yeah. So for me as a specialist, I review records from the primary care veterinarian before I see a patient for the first time. It's really helpful for me if I see that stress has been addressed with some type of anxiolytic medications, or at least the stress has been documented during visits with their primary care vet. That gives me the opportunity to suggest the use of anxiolytics, things like pheromones, trazodone, gabapentin, prior to even coming to our hospital. If stress is only recognized once I see the animal for the first time, or in the situation where, you know, primary care veterinarians are seeing the stress patient for the first time, you can equip the client with tools for decreasing stress prior to their next visit. And sometimes it's only things like pheromones or calming music in the car. I always ask clients if they have a Spotify account, because there's two great albums that I really like on there. One is called Music for Cats, which is specifically designed for the cat's neurologic systems. The other one is Through a Dog Ear. And so both of those albums get recommended pretty regularly to my clients as they drive their pet in to see me. Other times, the patient benefits from pharmaceuticals like trazodone and gabapentin during the visits. And I try to describe anxiolytics as a tool to allow my behavior modification techniques to work more effectively. Creating positive associations with the clinic is a lot easier if the animal's willing to take treats. But if the pet's too stressed or anxious that it gets in the way of them taking treats, it's going to be really tough for me to create that positive association. It's as if you were sitting down to have dinner with Hannibal Lecter. You'd be really hesitant to eat. But if you're out to dinner with your friend having a glass of wine, you're probably ordering an extra appetizer. So the long-term goal is to create a positive association with our hospital so that in future visits, we're less likely to need anxiolytics.
Yeah, that's really funny about Hannibal Lecter, because I was just thinking about what you were saying about baseline. You know, your goal for stress is not ever to get to the point that you can't get the pet back to baseline with treats and scratches and, you know, stopping doing what you're doing. And it's no good if you come in with a baseline that's through the roof, right? Because if the stress is that high already, like if I know I'm going to dinner with Hannibal Lecter, you're not ever going to get me to calm down and eat. And so, so I feel like this sort of preemptive strike on stress, talking about pheromones and the car ride and reading the records beforehand, is kind of trying to set that baseline at a place where if we can get back to it, we can still manage to keep it a positive experience. And I also love that you just brought to my attention that there are playlists on Spotify for dogs and cats, because that is amazing. I'm going to start using those for sure. And this is such a big and timely topic, the idea of reducing stress for patients, besides the Spotify playlist, because that's like gold. Do you have any other additional resources that you can share with people who are interested in this topic?
Absolutely. There's a lot of really good resources available on fearfreepets.com and lowstresshandling.com. They have lots of information for veterinarians, veterinary technicians, other professionals that are working with animals, like groomers and trainers as well, for how to make the entire pet experience as stress-free as possible. So I would highly encourage anyone who is interested in creating this really welcoming situation in their clinic to visit those websites and get some more information.
Awesome. And we will put links to those in the show notes for everyone who's listening. And we'll also put a link to more information about Claro, which is the ear medication that Dr. Brittany had mentioned earlier. It really is one of those products that you kind of wonder how you lived without before you had it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Dr. Brittany, do you have anything else that you'd like to share with us before we wrap it up today?
Yeah, I would say when you're starting to implement techniques to reduce stress in your patients, it can seem daunting if you try and do everything all at once, but it doesn't need to be. If you just watch an animal's body language, it's an easy first step towards recognizing how you can make their experience better. If you incorporate gentle handling techniques, offer lots of treats, and be proactive about using anxiolytic pharmaceuticals quickly, it becomes second nature to you. Those techniques are worthwhile investments towards building a better experience for the pet, as well as the clients and the staff. And I find that in the end, the days will go a lot more smoother, and you'll keep the good clients and the good staff returning for many years to come.
Amen to that. I absolutely agree with that 100%. And I want to thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Dr. Brittany. This was an amazing conversation. I love derm meets behavior, because it really behavior meets everything in vet med, right? Mm-hmm. And I love how passionate you are about helping your patients and their people. So thank you again so much. This episode was brought to you by Elanco Animal Health. Thank you guys all so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all of the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. And you can drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcasts is a Brief Media production.